This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Con Fringe reading series.
Okay, well, Nick and Ken seem to have reappeared from wherever they were plotting our demise. Yes, we'll come back to Edinburgh Fringe a little bit later. But first of all, we have to talk about our stories. And Nick, that was quite the funniest horror story I've ever heard. But you know, there is like this borderline, isn't there, between horror and comedy, particularly with B movies and stuff like that. Would you like to talk a bit about that?
Yeah.
Blood Slobber of the Scrunge Worms came about. That title I've been rattling around my head for decades, and it was Blood Scrunge, Blood of the Slobber Worms, blah, blah, blah. And when I heard about this B-movies anthology, I thought, I'll do a story about that. That can be the film. Then I thought, it can't just be that. It can't just be a film about... Blah, blah, blah. I thought, oh, you know what, I'll do a homage to 50s B-movies by having a couple go to see the film. Ooh, and oh, a little piss take of me and my mates in video shops in the 80s. And then I'll have a pop at sort of the sequels and things. So it came, the three time zones came out of it. And I think it works quite well when you first read it, because the guys in the video shop and the movie executive both sit down to watch the film. Then you've got the section in the 50s and you think that's the film, but no, they're going to see the film. And you've got a little extract and it goes back. And it's sort of a love story in the end, that everybody in the film falls out with each other except for the two 50s character, there might be a future. But B-movies are a very difficult thing to get right. I love cheesy B-movies. There's a whole slew of them around now. What's that company, The Asylum, that makes them? Sharknado is hilarious, hilarious. It's done it exactly right. Sharknado 2, tagline, the second one. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing.
Oh, hell no.
Oh, God. And I saw a clip last night of something called Stonados, which is Sharknado, but with CGI stones flying around, hitting people. It looked the cheapest, crappiest, but the actors all took it brilliantly seriously. There's a bit at the end of Sharknado where one of the characters has to react to the death of his nephew, whatever, and he's got this, does this brilliant... But if that had been on stage in a Shakespeare production, it would have been good acting. But because it's in some cheesy height, it's funny. Snakes on a Plane got it exactly wrong. Oh ho, motherfucking Snakes on a Plane. For months, you kept hearing that. Oh, Snakes on a Plane, it's going to be funny. The actors hammed it up, although I sat through, bored out of my mind. They got it wrong. They sent it up. So B-movies, it's got to be done with the right spirit. It's sort of a bit like Doctor Who in a way. You've got to take it seriously. The moment you send it up, you've got to believe in the world that's being created. And they're big business now. Jurassic World is nothing if not a massive big B-monster movie. And the only problem with it I had, I don't know if you've seen it. Anybody seen it? It had massive holes of logic that were too big that I could forgive in something like Stonados, where it's cheap. But they had velociraptors running through a jungle with a bloke on a motorbike going through a jungle. And how? A jungle's got roots and I just thought, oh, it took me out of it. I saw a perfect example of an Irwin Allen-style B-movie. It was San Andreas, starring The Rock. It had some of the most fantastic special effects I've ever seen. It was actually earthquake special effects of buildings falling down. It's actually stunning. I saw it in 2D. It got a bit repetitive, but the characters are the most horrendous, cliched characters, and they said the most cheesy things. The Rock rescues all these people, and this woman looks up to him and says, "How do you know to get us under here?" And The Rock says, "Well, you just need to find something... oh, I can't remember what he says now, something big and get up against it and you'll be safe." And his wife looks at him as if to go, "Ooh, massive metaphor for our relationship." And it's awful cheese, but I enjoyed it because that was done deliberately. They must have known how cheesy it was, but the actors played it straight. So it's a hard thing to get right, really. I don't know what my point is. But sometimes when they know too much about it, when the actors appear to know. I mean, surely all the actors appearing in these Sharktopus, you know, mega crop films know they're shite, but they haven't got to show it, and that's the key to it for me.
So, be honest, Nick, what is your opinion of remake?
Well, the quality, it depends on the intention and the quality of them. Mad Max Fury Road It's by the original director. Sadly, it didn't star. They had some fat bloke as Max, who was useless, I thought. But the tone, I've seen it twice now. It is a stunning, fantastic film, which drops you right in the middle of the world with no explanation as to what's going on. These people, and it's a completely immersive world. So remakes, reboots can be great. As I said in my story, the original, the Carpenter Thing was a remake, and it's better than the original. The Cronenberg Fly was a remake, and while I'll argue it's different to the original, it's a good film in its own right. When it's driven by money as its sole motive, it can go badly wrong. Poltergeist is a case in point. I watched that again on DVD. I got it for £2, the DVD. It is a screamingly 80s film. It is brilliant. You believe in the Freeling family and the pot-smoking mum and dad and the teens. It's got nothing to do with Poltergeist whatsoever, because at the end, all sorts of weird shit happens for no explanation. There's a giant dog thing, a huge face. There's a giant vagina flower thing grows in the wall. It all goes absolutely mental. And it's really, really enjoyable. It doesn't make a lick of sense, but it takes you on a journey. It's a great, entertaining film, directed by Tobe Hooper and or Steven Spielberg. The remake is exactly the same story, told in exactly the same order, with exactly the same characters, played by different actors, and the same story beats happen, only what they've done is they've tried to make it all make sense, and the afterlife, I don't want to spoil it for them, but the afterlife is a load of CGI zombies going, oh. And it is most boring, pointless film I've ever seen. And I quite regret seeing that, it was so terribly bad. So they can be good remakes, but straight remakes, remaking a film like Poltergeist with the same story beats, not giving another spin to it, or a new vision, or another angle to it, is purely to make money. That's when they're bad. But and it's been done quite a lot. The RoboCop one was absolutely dreadful. The same with Total Recall. And they seem to be churning them out at a horrendous rate now. And I'm not some old man going, because some franchises reinvent themselves really well. The Star Trek one, although not to my tastes, has done really well. James Bond is more popular than ever now with the new Daniel Craig films. And I can see why they do these remakes, reboots, because more people now are, they want to attract more people to the cinema. And if they want people to come, create a franchise that people will go back. They've rebooted Jurassic World, Mad Max, Terminator, Star Wars, Star Trek, and all the superhero movies that there are so many in development. They are creating stories now which will never end. People will go back to see, and on it will go, which is a bit depressing, really. I quite like a story with a beginning and end. You go and see a film, something like, can't think of anything. No, some SF, something like, something that hasn't been so far unsullied. Yeah, something like that. Something, Blade Runner, they're doing that again, Ken. Fuck's sake, there's nothing sacred. The one thing I hope they're not going to muck up is Alien, because it's taken enough kicks already. To me, there's only the first three films, and I know I'm probably on my own with Alien 3, because it's not much liked, but yes, so... Right, I think I've blathered on enough now.
It's my opinion that no matter how many times they reboot the Fantastic Four, they're never going to get a decent movie out of it. There we go. Anyway, Ken, Hive Minds, fascinating. It was almost a science fiction story, that, really, I mean, with the ideas. I've just been reading an arc of the new Philip Reeve novel, and there are some minor characters in that who are communal intelligences of cockroaches who form themselves into the shape of human beings in order to pass in human society, which I thought was absolutely fascinating. But, what do you reckon the chances are to actual insect hive minds?
Oh, well, pretty big question there. And as the story itself shows, I'm not really that much of a scientist. I tend to go for the appealing images. I mean, certainly insofar as you can look at certain insect societies, ants and bees, the most obvious ones that spring to mind. You can see that hive minds certainly work there on a straightforward basic level to ensure survival, production of food, defence of their own nest, things like that. I mean, that all fascinates me, but at the same time, there's this feeling with those, and this is the difference, I think, between fact and fiction. I don't think, at least I hope, that ants and bees have anything equating to human emotions or drives, not driven by love or revenge or greed, hopefully, because if they do, we're all stuffed. But it's that twist that can make a good science fiction or horror story in some ways. That's sort of what was happening there. And you mentioned the cockroaches as in human form. Well, going back a good few decades now, where was a novel, science fiction novel and horror called, I believe, The Hephaestus Plague, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, which was filmed rather as something called Bug. The basic idea, again, was cockroaches which develop beyond their hive mind, develop to produce fire by rubbing their rear legs together or something similar. At the end of it, they're spelling out words to the human scientist who's trying to sort of communicate with them by scuttling into shapes. So, yes, you look down, see cockroaches saying, "We will kill you," or something like that, yes, to put it that way. And I don't know, it's maybe the idea that they don't even need human drives, because they can still be frightening. It goes back a long, long way throughout fiction of horror or science fiction. Look at stuff like Lion Engine versus the Ants, where the ants are just driven by pure instinct again to survive. Look at the Welsh short stories like Empire of the Ants or Kingdom of the Spiders, where again it's just in developing that small extra degree of coordination. There is nothing particularly aggressive in itself, they're not trying to invade other countries. It's just the fact that where they are in these remote little locales that the stories are set, they have organised, and any poor human that comes wandering into there is stuffed. It's a difficult thing to say. It's a fascinating idea, but I'm just glad, I suppose, is the final thing, that they don't appear to have human feelings yet.
For the benefit of people listening on the podcast, Nick has been ferociously scratching himself ever since. Ever since Ken started that story. Now, of course, one of the appeals of writing horror is that you get to kill off people in a particularly nasty and vindictive way, which presumably one does to people one doesn't like. What on earth have celebrity chefs done to make you so angry with them?
Let's see. Ramsay's bad language, Oliver's annoying matey blokiness. The list goes on and on. I really have nothing against celebrity chefs in particular, I should hasten to add. I'm not about to go out and slaughter the latest one of the month. And Delia Smith is perfectly safe because I think Delia's lovely. But as much as anything, it's just the fact that with the story I wanted, I think someone who gets, and again, it ties into what I was saying, gets maybe attacked not from outside but from inside. The comparison at one point to cancer being the immediate fault, but I thought, yes, that's something just insensate doing stuff on whatever basic cellular level. I thought, what would be the case if something actually wanted badly to get inside you and attack from that way? And that was really as much as anything what delivered it. The easiest way of doing that is via someone associated with food, because eating stuff is a very easy way to get all sorts of interesting things in yourself. We're all raised as small children, say, don't put that in your mouth, don't know where it's been, which is very good advice, by the way. And ultimately, that's what decided it. I don't particularly dislike chefs, it was just they were a good way of getting the stuff into the system.
Yeah, don't play with your food. The food always wins. So, Justin isn't here tonight, which means that we need a volunteer to ask questions. I shall look around the audience, balefully glaring, and everybody is sitting on their hands. Joe?
It's not so much a question as a general observation, but talking about insect hive minds, I've just read Children of Time by Adrian Tchaikovsky, which is a science fiction story about a race of... Claire, put your hands over yours. It's about a race of giant sentient space spiders who use the hive minds of ants as their computers. So that's an interesting one. So if you wanna go for insect hive minds, that's a really good one to go for.
Yeah, Verna Vinci's Deepness in the Sky is a story about giant space spiders as well. And I read the whole thing. I was very proud of myself. Dan.
I recognised a lot of the films in the video shop, probably having a similar misspent youth, but was there really one called Snails?
Once upon a time, there were some snails. From Phelan they hailed, and one day, due to a surfeit of ale, they grew pale, quailed, and failed. No, I made that one up, snails. No, I do stand-up poetry sometimes, and I've got a whole poem about the snails that failed. It's basically every word that rhymes with snails, they meet their ends, like by being impaled on a rusty nail. I've only done that poem a couple of times, and nobody ever laughs, but... If there's a film called Slugs, you know,
and it's ridiculous if you've seen it, it's from the book as well. There might be some kind of sort of Italian horror film called Snails somewhere out there. I mean, it's, you know, all you could do, Snailian. In space, no one can hear you. Yeah, Snailian. Copyright me, that is, anybody listening.
The trouble with a film called Snail is that no one would shell out for it. Kept carefully.
God, before anything else happens, that was terrible. Okay, so the horror. Yeah, we were promised horror, and there it is. That was terrible. Okay, so do you still have your Video Solent card? Because we've still got ours in the attic. It's just a random. Yeah, no, it was just like I was transported back. It was quite scary.
Is that a question you've got there, Claire?
It was more of a comment that if you could get snails in horror movies, because we were just talking about that, they made a horror movie where a tyre exploded people's heads. Anything's possible.
Des also found one called Killer Condom. I haven't seen it, but I'd like her to find it for me. I'm intrigued.
Look, they've made films about anything. There's a film about sentient foreheads, for example. Anybody heard of that? Google it. Sentient Attack of the Killer Foreheads. It's just so anything. Whatever. There is a short story by somebody that I've tried to find about snails. And when I was a kid, it was on the radio, and we were driving back somewhere from a day out with my parents at night. The snail collector, and he's in a room full of snails. And he's in a room full of snails, and all the wallpaper falls on him, and he gets covered. And at one point, the narrator goes, "He swallowed a snail." And my little sister started crying, you know. So, Patricia Highsmith, that rings a bell. So, snails in horror have been done.
Of course, snails in horror have been done. Everything that Lovecraft wrote about left a trail of slime. Yeah, no, it's making sick jokes is my job, Nick. Do we have any more questions? No, we've all been horrored out, it looks like. Everybody's completely glazed over here. Never mind. How about some announcements? There must be something going on. Joe?
Hello, yeah, I just want to say, first of all, if you like your snails failing and your terrible 50s B-movies and whatever, then you should be following the Bristol Bad Film Club on Twitter and Facebook, because they specialise in this kind of rubbish, and they're awesome. What else? Yes, next month at The Fringe is David Gullen and Guy Sebold, and next week in here is The Pub. If anyone would like to join me in the pub, Gareth and I will be writing Crabalanche, and we're going to get Tom drunk enough to star in it.
Crabalanche?
Yeah, it's like an avalanche of crabs.
Oh, Tom.
Am I being accused of having crabs, Joe? Is that sort of like steady on?
No, you're just being accused of being drunk enough to agree to stuff.
Yes. Talking of being drunk enough to agree to stuff, Tom, I gather that you're going to Edinburgh.
Yes, my procrastinating from my book has got to extreme levels now, and I've agreed to be Dr. Watson in Sherlock Holmes, and I'm doing 15 shows at the Edinburgh Fringe at C venues, and we're on at 3:45 every day from the 16th of August to the 31st. So anyone in Edinburgh listening, it's £10.50. It's very, very funny, and it's well worth your time.
And that means that I need to get the podcast online before the 16th of August. That's a good deadline to have, yes.
Yes, it is called An Accidental Adventure of Sherlock Holmes. I should sort of mention the title. That's a good one. But yes, we're just type in Sherlock in the Edinburgh Fringe programme. There's only four shows, and there's one with a very debonair man with a moustache in the picture. Just click that one. That one looks really, really good.
Okay, well, best of luck with that. And, you know, if it's a roaring success, we expect to see it staged in Bristol again.
Yes.
Yeah, that'll be good. Okay, any more announcements? Pete, yes, what a surprise.
I always have announcements. Bristol HorrorCon is on the 17th of October. And they're running a short story competition. So if you're a big fan of horror, write us a short story, send it in, and you might get published. You might win some prizes. The deadline's the 4th of September.
Word limit?
4,000, I think, yeah.
Right, and something horrible, presumably, but not snails, because Nick's already done it. Have we any more announcements? Unusually, I don't have any. Possibly because I'm not going to be around most of August due to the fact that the railway is being dug up. In which case, As Joe said, the next BristolCon Fringe will be sometime in the 17th of August. And, there are Fringe flyers. And it will feature Gay Seabold and David Gullan, so it should be absolutely awesome.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.